Hi, everyone. I hope you are all healthy and happy. Today's episode is one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. I was on the Blank Canvas podcast with my two boys, Mark Brazil and Jeff Cole, and the three of us discuss all things entrepreneurship, including ambassadors versus followers. Text me your biggest takeaway from today's episode at 949-298-2905. And don't forget to register for my free trainings every Friday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. You could text me or email me at david@dmeltzer.com or visit dmeltzer.com/training to register.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
What's up, guys? Super excited for this episode today. We have an entrepreneur here that was an entrepreneur before it was cool to be an entrepreneur, which is rare.
Yeah, it was not cool.
Thank you so much for coming to the show today, my man.
Welcome.
Right on.
I want to get right into the piece. Usually we're doing it at the end of the episode, but I want to start right with it. It looks like you've been pushing this content, talking about getting 1% better every day. What does this piece mean to you?
So my tagline of life is to enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent without quit pursuit of your potential. Right. So if your potential, and it's of whatever it is, if it's to be a father, if it's to be a millionaire, whatever it would be, you need to know and prioritize your what and then enjoy the pursuit of that. And you'll actually get there a lot faster. The biggest difference, I think, today of being an entrepreneur or even succeeding in anything is that everyone really doesn't get time. You know, like I always joke around, I'm like, you know, it seems like kids are talking about 2 to 6 years, and that seems like a long time for them. Mm-hmm. I'm personally 51 years old. I'm on a 20 to 60 year plan. My following is about ambassadorship. People don't realize if you get 2 ambassadors a year, right? I literally charge $10,000 a year to build people's brand under this business, guys. 20 year plan, I'll get you 2 million ambassadors, not 2 million followers, 2 million people that will get you 2 million people that will get you 2 million people. That's a legacy. That's an annuity that you can monetize for your grandchildren's lives. It starts with 2 people in year one, under this 1% better. In year one, if I got you 2 ambassadors, Mark, and they would get you 2 ambassadors and I charge you 10 grand, you'd be like, Dave, come on, man. But in 5 years, we'd be at 64 people and you had paid me 64. You'd pay me 50 grand. At 10 years, you'd be at 2,000 ambassadors, right? Just 2 at a time. 15 years, 64,000 ambassadors. Is the 150 grand worth it? And then is the 2 million worth it for 200 grand? But most people don't take that perspective. Let me just inch you up, but enjoy it. Enjoy that 1%. Don't look at it as, you know, well, God, it's 99% more to go. What happens to most people, real quick, they get to 25% of the way there. 99% of the people quit, no matter how long it takes. If they're accelerating and growing, getting better, this is why I love this piece, man. Yeah. Half amount of time, you'll be at 50% of the way there. Out of the 1% that remain, 99% quit at 50% because they start voting for what other people want. They start listening to, oh, you should be married. You should have this. You could stop, you know, you dropped out of school. You're a loser. Well, here's the funniest part. At 50%, under 1% better every day or whatever you can do to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit, you're half as much time away from being 100%, then half from 200, half from 400. People don't get acceleration and growth. That's what that means to me. Accelerate and grow and enjoy it.
I think people sorely overestimate what they can do in a year and they underestimate what they can do in 10 years. People aren't patient.
It's incredible. I use a chess analogy.
Yep.
So chess players, if you're a beginner, you can only see one move ahead of you. And that's the problem with most entrepreneurs. They're beginners. Right? And that's why that year and 10 year thing that you talk about. But an intermediate player can see 1 to 3 moves ahead. An advanced player, 3 to 5. A master, 5 to 10. A grandmaster, 10 or more. I tried to look and see, as being a more experienced entrepreneur, to be a grandmaster. I'm looking so far ahead of where I can be and enjoying getting there.
Do you think entrepreneurs are born or made? Because for me, I think experience is sorely underestimated in the game of entrepreneurship because people are getting 1% better every single day. And it's just the compound effect. Over the years, you're going to get smarter and smarter. But for me, I personally think an entrepreneur is born. You either have it or you don't. What's your opinion on that?
So funny, because I think everyone is born with so much genius and that our traditional systems are stifling us. Right? We're stifling us through education, through experience and all that. I think that to say that they're all born, I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, but, yeah. Ahead, I mean, for me, like, I'm an artist, right? So, like, entrepreneurship, I'm doing entrepreneurship through art. I think everyone can do entrepreneurship through that one thing that they're passionate about. So, like, I get, obviously, Mark thinks that they're born, but I think it's more of, you have to actually find that outlet for it to kind of showcase.
I think yeah. Pure entrepreneurs are born. Jeff is actually a perfect example. About 2 years ago, before he discovered Gary, he wasn't an entrepreneur. He had no entrepreneurial strategy or spirit. And I've actually seen him grow as an entrepreneur. I'm talking about the pure, Gary. Psychotic,
me, it's you,
entrepreneur
Gary.
Or die type person. I think that that's just in your core DNA.
And I think that's true about whatever it is. You know, for me, it was born into me, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't even know it, but I wanted to make money so bad, right? And you got the Pump Brothers and Gary and all these people that were dealing cards when they're 8 years old.
Yep.
You know, at 5 years old, I didn't know what I was doing in Akron, Ohio, but, you know, I lived in a not nice area. I was running a paper bag up to the Lawson's convenience store
because
I was fast and small and innocent and white. So they figured, I don't know what was in that bag, but I can imagine now. But I got $5 for doing it.
I love it.
I believe that was born into me. Because my brothers didn't have any desire to do any of that stuff.
Yeah, I feel like I could tell right away. So let's rewind because your story, absolutely crazy. The highs were very, very high and the lows are very low. I don't even know where you want to start with it, but we have a lot of young entrepreneurs watching. And I think a lot of people underestimate the importance and value in actually failing. And for me, I really value, you know, micro failures as long as they're not fatal, but you had some fatal failures that got lessons. Really low and you've bounced back. So tell us just a little bit about kind of your upbringing, the up and the down.
Yeah. Just to start, right? Life is about lessons. And I've learned those lessons, as you call failures. And so I really think young entrepreneurs, just if you can think of what you feel as a failure, as a lesson, and draw a lesson, you take away that moniker. There's so many of those great things you've offered me that had to do with that. I was so pressed because lessons are important. Here's the lessons that I learned real briefly. One, I grew up broke. Unbelievable mom. I still have an unbelievable mom. Five boys, one girl, single mom, worked two jobs, packed our dinner into a station wagon. Dad left at 5, deadbeat dad who was really rich, married a girl closer to my age than his. I idolized him. So you got a 7-year-old sitting in the back of a station wagon in between two jobs. Mom's struggling. And I'm like, you're such a loser, mom. Why can't you be more like dad? Meanwhile, my dad's not supporting us. My mom completely lived the life of humility to be a catalyst to my siblings all went to the Ivy Leagues. Academics were the most important things, doctor, lawyer, or failure. That's the way I grew up. The fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. Literally, there was no messing around in my house when it came to grades.
Yeah.
I wanted to be rich. One reason, I grew up super happy, except for I'd catch my mom crying. Financial stress. Car broke down, didn't have money for food. I could see her embarrassed because we had food stamps one time, you know, and I still get choked. You could feel like my emotions still because I'm just sitting there going, gosh, I don't want that. So I'm going to be rich, buy my mom a house, buy my mom a car. And I was 5 when I first came up with this. I was going to make $1 million. That was my manifestation, man. If I could make $1 million, I could buy my mom a house, buy her a car, and retire.
So how did you know about money back then? Because I was watching a video and you said 5 years old, but like, what was your relationship with money? Like, how did you know about $1 million? How did you know about, you know, all these
because
things?
We couldn't afford, like mine was, money was related to scarcity, right? So the money was, something was broken or summer camp or that money was a conversation from the time.
All the time.
All the time.
Food on the table,
it
clothes.
Was the fear. It was what exists. Everything else was perfect. I had like incredible siblings, a loving mom and home, tons of fun, you know, tons of fun. But it was literally, that money was to me the only thing. And then I got insecure about it as I grew. The kids' parents were doctors and lawyers. I would lie and make up stories about my dad. I'd make up stories about my mom. I'd tell people how rich I was. Literally lie to people because I was so insecure that I wanted to prove that I was better than these people. Just because their dad had money didn't make them better than me. And I'm not sure any of them thought they were better than me. But in my mind, my insecurity dwelled on the fact that the more money you have, the more people respect you and the happier you'll be.
we're going to get into how money ties into happiness. Let's talk about the ascension. The sports world is where you really made your stamp. So growing up, didn't have a lot of money. Tell us about college and on.
Yeah. So then I go to college to play football. I chose because that was my dream, to be a professional football player. Get run over my first game by Christian Okoye, lying on my back. I'm like, doctor, lawyer, failure. I have to tell this tiny part because I wanted to be a doctor, because my older brother was a doctor right here, UCLA, you know, and I went into the hospital. This is what I see with entrepreneurs all the time. I wanted to be a doctor at 18, pre-med, still a good student, not like the Harvard, Penn, Columbia students that my siblings were, but I was driven. I told my brother, I'm like, man, I hate hospitals. He almost fell over. He goes, Dave, what do you mean you hate hospitals? I'm like, I don't want to be a hospital doctor. I was 18, fairly educated kid. I was no clue what I was doing. My brother gave me the best piece of advice that I still use today for being an entrepreneur. Be more interested than interesting. I see so many guys, million great ideas out there, haven't even thought about how to monetize it. I see so many entrepreneurs that are not interested. They're interesting. They're engineers and they got great ideas and apps and software. And no, you need to be interested. You need to figure out exactly what's going on. And so that shook me, went right to Dr. Lawyer Failure. Okay, lawyer. So I went to law school. Here's what's cool about my law school experience applying to entrepreneurship. I met Steve Jobs when I ran Samsung's first phone division, right? I had the first smartphone after I got out of law school. But I chose my law school, something that Steve Jobs later told me in life. He said, you only can connect the dots backwards, David. So I connect without knowing that rule or lesson. I chose my law school because I literally was more interested. I did research on what are the richest graduates from law school? What do they do? Oil and gas litigation. Working for gas companies. So I went to Tulane Law School in Louisiana because it had the best maritime law program. And I was engineering my career to making money. I didn't care what I did. I wanted to be the richest lawyer. So that's what I did. Ironically, graduate law school, get two jobs. One offers, one to be a litigator, the other to sell legal research online. And this is what you two were talking about earlier. I was a born salesman. I was a born entrepreneur. Yeah. And I went against my mother. My mother told me when I asked her what I should do, Dave, you need to be a real lawyer. This internet, it's a fad. Don't do it. You're going to lose all your money. That's literally what she said. Yeah. Well, I learned another valuable lesson that we talk about, and we'll talk about this. Yeah. I talk about putting faith in what other people think. Voting, I took earlier. People quit because they vote for what other people want for them. You keep voting for something, it's going to be elected into your life. First time in my life, I didn't vote for what my mom wanted.
You did what you wanted.
I did what I wanted. I just had a feeling the internet wasn't a fad. I knew I had a $250,000 comp plan, and I just had a feeling I could blow it out. Millionaire 9 months out of law school, bought my mom a house, a car, reaffirmed money buys love, money buys happiness. I became the favorite child of my mom, or at least it appeared to be, and I was super happy.
And how old were you then?
24.
Wow.
You said something that I thought was great. It's like the people that love you the most don't necessarily give you the best advice.
Yeah.
So like what was her, what did she want you to be doing?
Being a real lawyer, right? She wanted me to be secure. She wanted, I had worked so hard, borrowed money to go to law school. I'd done all these things right in her mind, and then I was going to blow it. I imagine that's what a parent would feel like if you dropped out of Harvard and said, you know, I'm going to go start Microsoft or Facebook or something like that. And that's the way she felt. And I fought it, man. I didn't want to disappoint my mom, but I also wanted to buy her a house and a car. And I hedged my bet. Like, there's a reality to this, right?
Yeah.
I took the bar and I told her, look, if I suck at this, I'll go back and be a real lawyer. Right? That was the only saving grace in my mom's mind. And in her mind, I was going to be a real lawyer. In fact, my favorite thing is, like, I was making a lot of money. And she would lie to all her friends, and they're like, what's Dave doing? Oh, he's a lawyer for a legal publisher, which I guess isn't a lie because I am a lawyer and I work for, right? Yeah. But she could not admit that I was a salesperson. Mm. And I couldn't even at first, because my own ego, I'd put ESQ on my card so people would know that I passed the bar and I went to law school. So, you know, ego played a big role in voting for what I wanted. But I learned very quickly that I could sell. And then I had a knack for being, there's intrapreneurs, entrepreneurs, boomerpreneurs, solopreneurs. You know, when we're talking about entrepreneurs, I want to include all of those people out there, because I think sometimes people don't think. I was truly entrepreneurial within a huge corporation that sold for $3.4 billion my third year in, which set my trajectory in a different, completely different light. But I also went to the Silicon Valley and branded myself an internet guru, not a lawyer. And that's where I started learning how to raise money on Sand Hill Road. That's how I started working into the middleware, into the wireless space. That's how I ended up being CEO of Samsung's first Windows CE device, 1999. And my favorite thing is people told me all that those phones are too big and too expensive. You know, now I'm like, are you kidding me? I was just early, not too big or too expensive.
Yeah. Interesting. So let's talk about the DNA of an entrepreneur. I think, you know, you touched on sales. I actually think that that's the number one most important trait in an entrepreneur, because I think another thing that you said is just every single day you need to focus about just staying in business, and sales cures all. So when you kind of dissect all of the relevant traits to being a successful entrepreneur, what are some other attributes you think are important outside of sales?
Yeah, so I think into being an entrepreneur that there's that persistent side of it. You know, there just has to be that attitude that it doesn't matter. I'm going to go and I'm not going to quit, because staying in business is the key to being an entrepreneur. Yeah. Eventually, you'll get a touch of favor. Something, it's just raising your own awareness of the different opportunities that already exist around you. But you can't do it if you're not getting up. Mm-hmm. You know, so most entrepreneurs you check, they're Rocky fans. Right? They literally are Rocky fans. They can't help it, but want to get up. Mm-hmm. And you have to have that in the DNA. I think also you have to have this money hungry side of you.
Yeah.
I still do, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a huge philanthropist, but my first motto is make a lot of money to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. But I think if you're not money driven, it's really difficult. I don't buy into the BS of, you know, the socially impactful, you know, driven by, I just want to help people. You need money. Yeah. And I find that 99.9% of all the great entrepreneurs I know are money driven.
Yeah, I think it sucks because, you know, I think entrepreneurs have this stigma to being greedy, and I just don't think that's true.
I don't either.
It's a necessity for money. I mean, money is direct. If you're an entrepreneur, money is actually very important to do everything you want. But I just hate when I'm talking about my business and stuff with people, it comes off as a little greedy. And I just don't like
greed,
that.
Stigma. Greed is what you do with your money, right? The other one that's up there that I only did, money doesn't buy happiness. Mm-hmm. Money allows you to shop, right? Money allows you to shop. If you shop for the right things, you'll be super happy. You shop for the wrong things, you'll be super unhappy.
Yeah, it just exposes you, like how you spend
it. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important. Like, what is your energy in relationship to money? People don't think about that. I went to a seminar, a workshop, about my energy of money and my relationship to money. Because if you went around the room and said, what does money mean to you? People will say freedom, security. It'll go on and on. It's an emotional thing. It's an object of energy that you put into the flow. So why not understand that energy of the object so that you can attract more in the flow?
Yep. Interesting.
I like that.
So you know a lot of people and you have a huge network. So this is a question that we never asked. I feel like that you'll probably have a good answer to this. Let's talk about creating a super entrepreneur. Why don't you pick a couple people and let's take some attributes. If you had to pick the best entrepreneur in the world, his confidence, his sales skills, his network, let's pick a couple people. Let's people
starting,
in your
network. Starting five.
Yeah, starting you're, five. Let's pick some people.
Starting five. You're going to laugh at my first one because people don't think about him, but Einstein. So Einstein to me is the ultimate entrepreneur. And I think he would be first on my team because he has the highest awareness of how the entire universe works. But he also was a true entrepreneur. He actually went and created E equals MC² and was ostracized for 10 years from the physics community, even after he proved it, right? He lost every single thing, bankrupt, trying to prove what he believed was valuable. And I think what he proved has been extremely valuable. His brand is extremely valuable. Mm-hmm. And he would be my first choice because I'd love to have him as a consultant to understand at a higher level what the heck is going on around me.
Yeah, that's an interesting first pick.
Yeah.
I like where this is going.
Well, he is good. He's good. One of my favorite quotes is creativity is intelligence having fun. And I love that quote from him because he brought kind of the creativity into entrepreneurship.
There's the artist in my boy. Yeah. Exactly.
That's my favorite quote.
Yeah. So the second one is probably going to freak people out as well. It's Trump.
Wow.
Yeah. So you
bring this on the show. I was always this is, you don't talk about this.
Publicly. No, man, you need an evil genius.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Like, no, honestly, like,
it's all about how you position it.
I'm not going to even go political, right? Yeah. Although my wife will tell you, but like, literally, the man can manifest. He is very understanding of all the different nuance. I literally would love a guy. He's either a conscious, subconscious, or unconscious genius when it comes to figuring out the spheres of influence. I've never seen someone so aware of utilizing social media in such a direction where he sees things that, you know, in my traditional past, I'm like, that's crazy. How could we ever have a president say that, do that, think that?
And still win.
And he literally, you know, amazing that he could still win a second term with what's going on.
I'm so curious as to if it's his personal intelligence or it's his awareness to hire really intelligent people and empower them.
Yeah. Or good lawyers, or just how to work your lawyers. I don't know, but I want him on my team as an entrepreneur. Yeah.
what was that documentary that outlined that he just outspent the living shit out of Hillary Clinton?
The Great Hack.
The Great Hack.
Yeah.
Just he knew that the underpriced attention was on Facebook and he was literally, I don't know.
Yeah, he was like outspending Hillary Clinton by like 10x or something.
Yeah. So I need that on my team. The next one would be Gary.
There we go.
Yeah.
Gotta have Gary.
Gary's my mentor, but his experience and knowledge in the digital space, media space, of understanding content is genius. And I think to the future of being an entrepreneur, you have to understand three things, and that Gary does it better than anyone I know. He knows how to capture what happens, amplify it, and then perpetuate it all within the guise of monetization. He has a grandmaster vision of 20 years, you know, and he knows how to frame things really well. When I talk about framing, he does it unconsciously. You need someone that knows how to frame things. So he's one of those guys that would say, okay, this is a problem. If God told me my mom's going to die in 6 months if I don't solve this problem, you know, would I solve it? Like, he's able to frame and like totally go for it. So I'd have Trump, Einstein, Gary. He'll probably appreciate that he's in that crowd.
I think the most underestimated thing about Gary
EQ for me
is the intelligence. Yeah. I'm not going to say that I meet a lot of successful people and they don't give me good advice, but every time I meet with him, there's just one piece of advice that he gives. It's one actionable item we leave there with. And it's stuff that I don't see.
Yeah.
And I think pretty highly of myself and think that I have a pretty good strategic vision, but he sees stuff that people don't see. And I mean, his track record, I mean, it's on record. He's the prophet. He bets on things 5-10 years later and they happen. So I can't go against it.
You know, Tillman wrote my forward, Tillman Fertitta.
Yeah.
He told Tillman, right? If I were you, man, I'd be buying Rocket jerseys for all 6-year-olds in Houston. Like, I think I have high EQ, right?
That's a brilliant idea.
That's the kind of stuff that you're talking about and I'm talking about. Like,
the cost of goods on that is probably $5. So he's acquiring these marketing assets for $5 and they're roaming the streets.
Yeah, for the next 50 years.
And he's going to
have a fan for life.
The lifetime value he's just going to make.
If I gave you a jersey when you're 6.
That's a good idea.
It's a great idea, right?
I haven't heard that one.
It's a good one.
Yeah, but that's the Gary side of things. All right, next one on my team, probably surprising, but maybe not, is Warren Buffett. And I'll tell you why, simply because
I want to know the why. Yeah. That's not surprising to me.
Okay, good. Yeah. Meaning, making money is important in entrepreneurship. They're literally, I tell people all the time, all you have to do is go to the geniuses if you want to make money. So if I'm an entrepreneur and making money in my business, I want to now accelerate the money making. So all I need to do is go to Warren Buffett, who I could never catch up to his knowledge of the markets, and say, hey, Warren, can you tell me when it's oversold so I can buy?
Yeah.
And can you tell me when it's overbought so I can sell? Two simple questions. Like, I would go, like, why I like Ryan Serhan. I don't mess around with real estate. I could just go to someone that has extreme knowledge and experience and say, tell me when it's oversold, bro. That's all I want to know. If a guy with that much experience, knowledge, and success knows when it's oversold, then buy, and when it's overbought. So I need Warren Buffett to be the gauge of oversold and overbought and tell me what to do with the money in the company to make it grow. The last person. This is the
starting
toughest
center.
One.
Who do you got?
The starting center.
Let's do this, actually. Let's make it a woman.
Perfect.
Woman.
Well, I was almost going to say my mom, so you had it there.
No.
gosh, there's so many good choices. Gosh. Oh, my goodness. As a woman, I think I'm still going to go to my mom, man. I hate to do this, but in my whole life, there's nobody Like, my siblings are extraordinary. You know, I base my life on the knowledge, like these lessons, like don't live below the line. I think having her on my team, I'm a value-based leader. And as much as I teach values, kids come into my office and they want to learn to be sports agents and marketers and PR and media now and all the things that we do. And I'm like, hey, you're going to learn gratitude. You're going to learn forgiveness. You're going to learn accountability and how to live an inspired life. My mom, I have 50-year-old guys coming up to me still today going, your mom changed my life. I was like, she's your second grade teacher, dude. What are you, like, yeah. What have you done with your life that your second grade?
She's like the Yoda in you. All that your messaging that's in relation to like gratitude and humility, I feel like that comes from your mom.
Yeah, and I think to build a true company, a real company, you need values and culture. Mm-hmm. And there's no one who's more catalytic, like can mm-hmm. inspire just in pure humility. She's not like me out there, you know, big speeches and all that, just behind the scenes and still has no relationship to money. She'll have nothing to do with the money side of the business because she'd lose it all. You could give my mom $100 million, it'd be gone. It's just her energy. And she knows that. But that company would live by integrity. Everyone, it would be the best place to work. You know, you hate to say the Jewish mom's going to make the best place to work. So, not to discount all the great women entrepreneurs that we've known.
It seems like she taught you perspective and it goes back to when you were 5 years old. So that's always good. I think that one of the biggest problems we have as society is we lose perspective, how good we actually have it. So I think we kind of always need that anchor to bring us back to make us, grateful and all the,
You're right. And speaking of bringing us back, right? Going back to the original story.
Let's talk about the shit.
Right?
Let's
there is a story.
Shit, Dave.
My mom played a major role in that, right? So here I am, 32 years old, multimillionaire. I end up marrying my dream girl, a girl that my best friend in the sixth grade camp asked her to go steady with me. And she said no. So I threw an egg at her. Like I'm like Midas. I literally, at 32, if I connect the dots backwards, besides not being a professional football player, like I was a beast.
What position did you play?
I played punt returner and weak, very weak corner, a man-to-man coverage. Okay. But I was really quick and I could run scared really fast. And I was a great returner. I weighed 147 pounds. But besides, here's the irony of my life. I always say, from 32 backwards, I married my dream girl. Everything I touched, I made money on. I had great relationships, all these different things, but my ego is way out of control. The irony is the one thing I say I didn't achieve was to be an NFL player. If somebody asked me still today, all right, Mr. Enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential, where was the closest that you ever reached your potential? Besides my wife and children, which everyone should say, I believe being an average Division III football player, like what God gave me talent wise, that was the closest. I worked so hard from the time I was 7 till the time I was 22. I stayed so focused and I have harnessed that ability into business and into my life that even these young kids cannot keep up with me. And it all stems from what I used to do when I was 15, 16, first one in, last one to leave, learning to love everything that I did. That's my superpower is I have the ability. You can tell me, dude, go clean my floors. I'll take a minute to figure out how I'm going to love it. What I'm going to do to make sure that I really enjoy that.
I think 147 pound and playing football in college. I think that's a W. I don't know what you think. Yeah. I don't know. That's like that's Rudy status. Okay. So you're 32.
Yeah.
32. You're rich. You marry your wife.
I have two kids, a third on the way. And literally start investing. I leave Samsung. Well, they kicked me out because the company grew and I was a sales guy, not a CEO. Mm-hmm. So, second largest manufacturer of phones. They gave me an option to be a sales executive or, step down for money. I took the money. So I became an investor. Started literally, I built this big house in Rancho Santa Fe. And I was so empty. I didn't know what to do. It was everything was about money. And I started buying more things, different things, getting more and more unhappy, surrounding myself with bad people, bad ideas. For the first time in my life, I lost who I was. And ironically, I met Lee Steinberg, the most notable sports agent. And being the salesperson I am, growing up with the siblings that I had that were very similar to him in personality, he hired me to run. Jeff Morad had left the firm, bought into the Diamondbacks. I literally became the CEO of the most notable sports agency in 48 hours, basically. And now I'm surrounded by even more stuff, mm-hmm. right? Ego wise. And Lee's a big drinker, you know, which now he admits, thank goodness. So, and he's healed because that didn't help me any. Yeah. So I'm around drinking and drugs and girls and sports and everything. And it accumulates 2 years before I lost everything. I lost over $100 million. 2 years before, there's three things that I always go back to. One, it was before I even knew I was messed up. When I was 30 years old, so I told you my dad was my hero. At 10 years old, my dad forgot my birthday, which was okay, except for he lied to me. My dad lied to me and said, hey, I didn't forget your birthday. I don't believe in birthdays. I was so smart at 10. I just completely said, oh my God, my dad's a liar, a cheater. And for the first time ever, my mom kind of, because I was so hurt, dug into my dad. She had never done that before. Told me that he cheated on her, told me, you know, think, because she was so upset for me. So I started hating my father for being a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, overseller, back-end seller. 30 years old, I get a birthday present. I'm on top of the world. My dad gives me a jacket, sports coat, fits perfectly. I'm in tears. I call him up. I'm looking at the jacket. He tore out all the pockets on the inside. So I'm like, oh, my dad, what are you doing? He's like, well, the jacket's not for wearing. It's to remind you of me. I want you to hang it in your closet to remind you of me every day. I'm like, what, that you're an asshole? He's like, no, you're just like me. And I went on a diatribe, man. I'm nothing like you. You're a liar, a cheater, a manipulator, overseller. And I literally stopped talking to him and put the jacket up. 2 weeks before, 2 weeks before where I started really seeing I had a problem.
Yeah.
My best friend went golfing with me. Now I'm 34 years old, 2 years before I went bankrupt. And I went golfing with him. I'm like, dude, how come you don't hang out with me anymore? This is the guy that asked my wife to go study at sixth grade camp. He knows me.
Yeah.
He just said blatantly, man, I don't like who you hang out with. I don't like what you're doing. And you're going down the wrong path. And I'm worried about you. I looked at him. I'm like, come on. I don't do what those guys do. They're good guys. He's like, Dave, you can lie to me, but don't lie to yourself. Then 2 weeks later is the day I'm at the Grammy Awards, Little John, partying. I lied to my wife. I told her I had a business meeting. Came home 5:30 in the morning, high, drunk. She looked at me and for the first time in her life told me she was not happy and that I better take stock in who I was, and she was leaving. And I went to bed really pissed. How dare her? Like, yeah. Literally, how dare you? I got a Ferrari, a Porsche, nanny right in the right wing. Like, literally, this is what's going through my head. I'm like, barely could go to bed. I wake up in the morning even more pissed. I'm looking for divorce lawyers, thinking, you know, she's cheating on me, right? All this stuff in my head. And somehow, you know, I'm looking over and I see that jacket.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and you're starting to see you're transforming into the guy that.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm like. Oh my gosh, I'm my dad. I'm everything that I hate. That's who I am.
Damn.
And so then I started thinking about my buddy, like why I was like this, because mm-hmm. he was right. And then I started thinking about my wife and how I could not blow this. You know, we talked earlier, you know, you got, what's your vices? And young guys like, oh, I love women. I'm like, and you're like, I'm a rarity. I'm a unicorn because I adore my wife.
Yeah.
And I adored her, but I was doing the wrong things and doing the wrong things to her and my family. And this is 2 years before I lost over $100 million. I literally at that time said to myself, got a pen and paper, started doing what my wife said, took stock in who I was. And I came up with these four things that are all over your pictures over there.
Yeah.
Gratitude. I was one of the most gracious. I was thankful for everything, even when I had nothing. That was just born in me, and I had lost it. I was forgiving, and I had to learn to forgive myself and others again. I cannot be offended and resentful, all the ego-based things that I was doing. Then the accountable side, you know, my mom lived by this whole thing. It was easy to blame my siblings for everything or somebody else. I lived by two things. One, what did I do to attract this? And two, what am I supposed to learn from it? And I stopped living there. And then the fourth one was I was one of the most inspirational people. I was Rudy, man. I was always the captain. I was the SBA guy at high school. I was always there because my mom was a rah-rah person. And I was the most and I lost all inspiration. I remember when I built my huge home, I'm lying there in bed going, oh shit. Like I was unhappy. But I was always like I am now. Mm-hmm. So I went to my wife, apologized, asked her, please forgive me. I've forgiven myself. This is how I'm going to live my life. And I need you to be my accountability partner. I'm going to live my life of service and of value. And I'm going to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun.
This is why you're still working with Lee Steinberg.
Yeah,
still working. To give a little context, just tell the audience a couple people that Lee Steinberg repped and you repped.
Yeah, so Lee Steinberg being the notable sports agent, it was Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Warren Moon, you know, the number one. They had 8 first picks in a row, 8 years in a row in the NFL draft. Baseball, Sabathia Ramirez sold the baseball practice for $90 million to Asante in Canada. Back when that was a lot of money. Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, wow. Even Oscar De La Hoya before he started Golden Boy, Lee had. Based the movie Jerry Maguire from Cameron Crowe and with Tom Cruise and all of that.
Wow,
Any Given Sunday worked on that. Arliss, he was a producer of Arliss. All types of. Lee is the legend, created sports agentry in my opinion, but you know, has had more Hall of Famers that you can't even name them all.
For further context, guys, for the younger audience, Aikman and Steve Young, for probably like an 8-year window, they were in the Super Bowl every single year.
And I name those because they're all Hall of Fame. And yeah. Warren Moon is my business partner, who's the first African American in the Hall of Fame, who they made play in Canada 6 years because he wasn't intelligent enough. So there's a lot of history there. So a lot of the big name, and today, you know, they still represent Mahomes. So, you know, wow. They don't mess around. It's the real deal. So I was, you know.
So you're getting your life in order. You're 34, but it didn't really start going down yet.
No.
So how did it go down if you're getting your shit in order?
Yeah. So getting my stuff in order, there's a lot of causes and a lot of time it takes. Just going back to, you know, 5-year, 10-year yep. plan.
Doesn't happen overnight.
I wasn't aware of all the ego-based problems that I had. You know, not the same person I am today, but I got into a lawsuit. I wanted to prove that I was right. I went through my cash, wasn't more interested than interesting, didn't ask for help. So I go to my private bank. I need cash. I have a golf course, a ski mountain, 33 homes. And I'm like, hey, I need to borrow against, you know, the golf course. My private bank said no. I was like, dude, I got $40 million equity. Give me $5 million. They said no. I'm like, what do you mean? We don't have to let you borrow against this. The economy's going down. We don't think there's 40 million equity in there anyway. And the bank's going down. We need that property. So if you can't make the payments, that's your problem. But, well, I couldn't make the payments because I had so much else. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden I miss one payment. Now nobody will give me money, right? I'm getting some money along the way.
Yeah.
But that's a big economy over 100 million. The golf course itself was worth 120. So it was a lot of money, but it moves fast. But it moves fast over 2 years, you know, a little bit of bleeding, you know, for 6 months, more bleeding. Then all of a sudden you're in the oh shitville and you're bankrupt, which was to me the best lesson, a needed lesson that for me. And the two parts of the lesson were, one, I needed to start over. I needed to prove my model, my true model of being of service. Like, I could be a millionaire by helping people, by not manipulating, lying, overselling, back end selling, and even cheating, right? I could just help people. I'm clever enough. I could provide enough value that I could guarantee it and never do that again. And then two, my mom taught me, of course, the Yoda, the cleanup hitter on the new entrepreneur super team. I realize, imagine this, you lose everything. Your mom's, you know, literally your guiding hope, the reason that you wanted money, right, to buy her a house and a car. I'm going down to tell her I lost everything. And in my head, I'm like, I have no idea how she's going to take this. You know, the guilt's going to be overwhelming. She'll be so disappointed. I had no idea. When I told my mom that I had gone bankrupt, I also realized that I forgot to take her house out of my name. I lost my mom's house. She had to move.
Wow.
She had to move.
Damn.
Yeah. I moved my mom, but I went to that door to tell her after telling Lee and Warren, who hired me at Lee Steinberg to be Midas, who, you know, our big legacy thing is, hey, athletes go bankrupt. None of ours do, because we teach them to give back to the community, to build their brand, to save their money. The CEO's bankrupt. This is not good, right?
Yeah.
My mom, I'm on the door. I'm like, Mom. Started crying. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I've lost everything. I went bankrupt. I have to move, and you're going to have to move. I'm going to do everything I can to help. But I am so sorry, without even a tear. My mom, you know, was an emotional person. She just looked at me and said, are you okay? Do you need any money? What can I do for you? And I'm looking at her going, oh, right. This is 2 years now into my transformation. I'm like, I'm not there yet. I don't, my mom and my wife for years, even when I was super on top of things, they would both tell me, Dave, you don't get it. I'm worried about you. You don't get it. You don't get it. You don't get it. And I'm like, you guys don't get it. Who do you think's paying the bills? You know, that car, who do you think bought that? This house, mm-hmm. these trips, you guys don't get it. And we would constantly, it was banter and joking, but there was so much truth to it because when I looked my mom in the eyes and she loved me unconditionally, I was like, man, I don't get it. Because I, everything I did was, like, even the giving, like, even to my kids, it was a trade. I was constantly trading because I'm a born entrepreneur. I'm a born, yeah. Like, everything was a deal. You know, like, well, I'll give that because I want everyone to put me on stage and go, oh, Dave, you know, built this, or Dave's name's on this, or what a, I love, oh, what a generous guy. Oh, he bought his mom a house. Like, I think I bought my mom a house.
For your own selfish reasons, that's how you did it?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. I because I wanted, number one, as a little boy, I wanted my mom to love me more than my siblings, right? I wanted to be different. I couldn't get summa cum laude from Harvard. So how could I beat them? Right? That's the entrepreneur in me. And that has all stopped. That has all stopped now. Well, not all. I'm on that journey to stop it. I catch myself sooner.
So it's pretty clear that your wife and mom were obviously paramount in helping you get to where you are today right now. And I think, you know, for me, when I'm up or down in life, in any category of life, whether it be money, whether it be health, or whether I talk to my family, I always look at who I surround myself with. And that, you know, famous quote, you are the average of the five people you hang out with, I think is so true. I want to talk a little bit about, like, network with you, because you're a master networker. And, you know, even it's so funny because your team, how they network and how, I mean, both the two guys that I'm looking at right now, I love how they operate. They're super supportive. They ask, how can I provide value? So let's just give for our audience a couple tips on just networking.
Let me give my secrets. I'm like Gary.
Yeah.
Right. This is the magic.
All the secrets are free. No course.
Exactly. No, it is so simple. Look, there's two questions you need to learn. You mentioned one of them that works with me. How can I be of service? How can I provide you value? What do I have that I can offer you to help you? And you don't have to just come out and say it. Sometimes just through questioning, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I love the Clippers. Oh, you know what? I got a box, right? I do it all the time. Two, and most importantly, in person, on the phone, via email, and all media, radio, print, TV, and social media, you need to memorize this question if you want to network, especially today.
Get the pen out.
Do you know anyone that can help me? It's the most powerful question in the world that changed my life. I am, in no ego involved, I have spheres of influence and a huge network because I am constantly providing value to other people and asking them, hey, do you know anyone that can help me? I'm trying to figure out YouTube. Do you know anyone that can help me? I'm trying to share my content. Do you know anybody? Literally, mine and Gary's relationship is treasured to me. Was two Super Bowls, almost three Super Bowls ago. I didn't know who he was. That guy over there, huge fan. He's like, you got to meet Gary Vee. I'm like, who's the heck's Gary Vee? I'm in the Nike suite at the Super Bowl. Who's he play for? He's like, no, his brother's over there. That's AJ. And, you know, I was like, oh, cool. I go, well, what am I going to do? He's like, I think they're starting a sports agency. So I went over to AJ, started talking to him, saying, hey, I have a, you know, vast experience. If you guys are starting a sports agency, let me give you some of the secret sauce. I'd love to help you guys.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, oh, you got to meet my brother. Well, who's that? He goes, Gary. I'm like, oh, Gary Vee?
Yeah.
I knew. So he walked me over and I started dumping on Gary value. Stuff that he didn't know. And he's humble about what he doesn't know. And so he's immediately, because he does keep track, he's like, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, what can I do for you? And I was like, well, to be honest, do you think that I could build a brand? Like, you know, like an old middle-aged guy. I go, I got books and I speak on stages. I'm fairly motivational and inspirational. I got a good story. Do you think you could help me? And so we started helping each other. And I literally, you know, do you know anyone that can help me, Gary? Mm-hmm. And he has been helping me it'll be three Super Bowls, you know, in a couple months. And nobody's changed that part of my business that I give more credit to him for those. And we do sometimes 5-minute meetings and calls.
Yeah.
Like I'll come to New York and he'll give me 5 minutes and I will already have listed out, here's what I want to know. One of the questions that I ask him all the time is, what's your best, you know, new piece of advice to what I should do? And he nails it.
Yeah.
And changes my trajectory with that. So ask people, do you know anyone that can help me? In person, especially. Like I get more business and networking sitting on a subway in London mm-hmm. on the tube. And my wife's like, you're talking to everyone. I was like, yeah, well, I'm interested. So, hey, what do you do? Oh, hey, you know, my friend has this. Why don't you go over to this pub? I'll get you. Here's a name. Can you help me? Oh, and next thing I know, I'm on, you know, London Real or, you know, like all these.
Yeah.
Just from asking.
Yeah. Closed mouths don't get fed.
Yeah.
Our favorite.
I love it. So let's wrap up. Tell us right now, where can people find you? What's going on in your life? And yeah.
So been blessed. You have Elevator Pitch is the entrepreneurial show on Entrepreneur, Reach TV, a variety of other things going on. Playbook is my podcast, which you were a great guest on. You can find that all over the place. For me, my personal stuff is all David Meltzer. So it's David Meltzer, at David Meltzer, YouTube, LinkedIn. I try to give as much content as I can. I am of service. I do a lot of business advisory, executive coaching, speaking, book writing, that stuff. And I'm still have Sports One Marketing. So we're still doing the traditional stuff as well. Just more media enhanced than it used to be between hospitality and sponsorship, Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, Masters, Kentucky Derby, Breeders' Cup, all the fun stuff. And it's all charitable. So anything I do has a charitable component or a cause attached to it.
Love it. For the young entrepreneurs listening, this is one of my favorite accounts on Instagram. Dave has not only macro gems, but micro trends too. Some super practical, granular advice. Highly recommend following him. And thanks for coming, man. Yeah.
Hey, podcast listeners. Thank you for listening, as always, to today's episode. I know you've been enjoying the Road to Revenue episodes. They are downloading at record paces, and I am so grateful for you joining me, not only on the podcast, but live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you email me at david@dmeltzer.com or text me at 949-298-2905. Thank you so much.